The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining another episode of We the People. We are a smaller people today, however, because Bill is sick. He would have sounded like, he didn't even sound like Marge Simpson. He was sort of beyond that. It wasn't great, so we decided not to have him come in and pollute the world. So it's just...
He's not his usual sick self. He's actually ill.
Yeah, he's actually ill. And when we've been gone for 2 weeks, I really had to apologize to people. We had stuff. We just had...
Oh, wait, no one knows you were gone for 2 weeks.
Scheduling problem we did because we weren't on the chat room. People were bugged.
Oh.
So we pre-recorded the past 2 weeks, and we've been busy bees. Lots going on. Anyway, we're having a huge change here on our program today, a little bit, first hour. We were going to finally get into the topic of Dr. Kate Vandermoor, who basically is pretending to be a conservative advisor to the people in the irrigators in Montana, and she's doing a radio program and all this stuff. And I think if you look into her background, it doesn't add up. A lot of stuff doesn't add up, so we're in the business of taking care of things that don't add up. And we have a ton of information on the website, which is wethepeopleradio.us. And I guess we'll go backwards. Bill's not here to say, who are we? So my name's Aaron Ryan, and Bill Cundiff is out sick, so, you know, we won't talk about him anymore. And we have our engineer, our handy-dandy engineer who does all of our music, Bob Martin.
Don't worry, I was going to tell him who you were if you didn't.
Yeah, I could see you looking at me, and I'm like, why is he trying to put words in my mouth? Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part. So let's see, we air Sundays noon to 2 here at KCNR on Sunday afternoons.
On the left coast.
On the left coast, yeah, you know, the blue coast. So depressing. Every time they show some statistic, it's always rough on campaign years because they show statistics of people who can't figure stuff out, and it's always us. So embarrassing. It was kind of funny, though. So anyway, and then Mondays, we are 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time in Philadelphia and the Jersey Shore on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network. So there you go. You have
in
lots
the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, sort of. So second hour here, we have Trevor Loudon, and that's all set. Nothing changed there. But our operative, who's talking about our operative, I guess our intel person, had an emergency today, a national emergency, as a matter of fact. So I hope you're all home and safe and all that kind of stuff. So there's stuff going on out there. We'll have to chat with her next week and get the full 411 on Dr. Kate. So anyway, I'll be making changes to the website while we're talking. If you're listening here on Sunday, the chat room will be up and running. And I know Bill is sick, but his fingers still work, so he'll be chatting. He'll be in charge of the chat today. Let's see, what else? Any other housekeeping?
With any luck, we won't find out what the national emergency is.
Exactly, because it will be averted and nobody will be the wiser. So we have commandeered Lawrence Kogan, a.k.a. Larry, who is an attorney in New Jersey. Are you in New Jersey or New York, Larry? You're in New Jersey, aren't
you? New York, New Jersey, D.C.
Yeah, I knew you were kind of all over the place. Where are you in real life?
I am in New York.
Yeah, okay.
And New Jersey and D.C. in real life.
That's what I thought. And Montana sometimes, too, because I know you've been working on
and Oregon and California.
Some of these issues which intersect with all the things we've been talking about with dams and Indian tribes and sovereignty and water rights and all that good stuff. We've done tons of shows on all these, so I do hope that if people are either just tuning in for the first time or you've been away for a while, go to wethepeopleradio.us. And you'll find not only the archives of programs, but you'll find all the information about those shows, which actually next week will be really important because there's a ton of information. So today you'll have to refresh your page as we go because we're going to be adding different things because we're having a different conversation, which is fine. All right. All my disclaimers being said. All right, Mr. Kogan. So you've been working on the Flathead reservation up there, and Kerr Dam, right? Is it Kerr Dam?
Yes.
Am I dams confused?
It was Kerr Dam, and then the tribe changed it to a name that nobody can pronounce.
That's why I can't remember.
It's a foreign language. We don't know what it says.
Ah, that's fun. And what was it? What's the second dam in real life?
Well, that is the main dam that was conveyed to the tribes on September 5.
But there were two, right? And it was
there's a bigger dam upstream from that that's twice the size, called the Hungry Horse Dam.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
That one is still in the hands of the government, at least overtly.
Okay. And we had, I don't remember when we had this conversation with you. It's been a couple of months ago, and we were also talking about, you know, this whole thing with tribal sovereignty and how that's how that's working out for everybody else. We've had recent developments, though, in the, was it Senator House this last week?
I think it was in the House of Representatives.
I think so, too. And it was a ruling that allowed tribes to be exempt from prevailing wage and that sort of thing. Do you know more about
that? There was a House bill that was sponsored by Montana's only congressman. I think you have one congressman for every 700,000 voters that are residents of a state when they do the census. And there's only a million people in the state, so they didn't quite get one in the third congressman. But this congressman, based on what he's doing, is really less than a person. So, in a nutshell, what he has done found another way to expand tribal sovereignty through regulatory waiver. Under the notion of federally recognized tribes, the federal government usually, through its agencies, excuse tribes from following normal regulatory requirements wherever it's possible. It's one way of giving back reparations for all the bad deeds that the federal government had imposed upon the tribes over the course of the last 150 years. And in this case, the tribes are now permitted, because of Representative Ryan Zinke from Montana, to now avert the need to follow National Labor Relations Board rules if they have employees that otherwise would be subject to union requirements. So imagine a tribe, for instance, out in another part of the country with a casino. They have a whole big union labor force. Now they don't have to follow union rules. And if you have other than union labor force, you know, you never have to follow union rules. So you don't have to be like the big auto company subject to a union takeover.
Sure. What was his thought process behind that? I mean,
money.
I know. Okay.
Votes and money.
Pretty straightforward.
Now, one must say about Representative Ryan Zinke is that he is a Gulf War hero. I mean, he did serve on SEAL Team 6, and he did protect the front door of our nation from terrorists. But by granting the tribes greater sovereignty within the borders of our country here at home, he has effectively left the back door open. And there's a lot of things that could happen on tribal reservations that are deemed sovereign nations. But he doesn't want to address that issue because he's getting lots of votes and money from the tribes.
And so when, that's obviously not the argument that he made to...
Well, of course not. He won't address the issues. I did meet him once at the Salt Lake City Airport, and we had an exchange together then. And I got to tell you, he thinks he's Joe Willie Namath.
For our younger listeners, who's a football player. So, interesting. Okay, so what does that mean? Okay, so for people who live in a town and don't have an Indian reservation near them and don't live near a dam and all those kinds of things, what does this mean for your average taxpayer?
It won't affect your average taxpayer directly unless they live anywhere near a reservation. But, you know, Representative Zinke's predecessors and other members of Congress 3 years ago signed another law that could result in risks to people all over the country that live within vicinities of reservations because they passed a law that allows federally recognized tribes to lease reservation lands, which are federal lands held in trust for the tribes, for up to 75 years to anybody that wants to pay the money to undertake a business activity on reservation. That includes domestic citizens and companies, and it also includes foreigners. So if you have a foreign business enterprise that comes on the reservation that wants to sprinkle money on the tribe, they can be coming from anywhere in the world, including from the Middle East.
I was going to say, we kind of got into this with you last time a little bit, but we really didn't explore the whole subject, and that is I learned a lot more afterward, but I thought you should share that with folks.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because on the one hand, everyone sees in the news these days that there are many thousands of refugees coming in from the Middle East under the infinite wisdom of President Obama's humanitarian program. Unfortunately, though, they're not adequately vetted. And yes, there are, most of these people are designated as authentic refugees through a vetting process. But the vetting process is not adequate enough to determine whether among these refugees there are potential terrorists coming from countries and from groups deemed terrorist organizations or a country supporting terrorist organizations.
Sure.
Now, some such countries include Iraq, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, perhaps, maybe even Turkey. Turkey has been known to harbor Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas, Hezbollah, and other groups, even though they're a NATO ally on paper.
Sure. And they're these guys are allowed to do all sorts of different things with minerals. Are we at break time, Bob? I just looked at the clock. I'm trying to get better at that.
No, they can't touch minerals under these leasing rules. That is the only exception. They can't extract anything from the earth.
Okay, that's
without Bureau of Indian Affairs oversight and vetting.
Okay. When we come back, let's chat a little bit more about that, because we got into some things with you on our previous program, which I will link here swiftly on the break. I'm typing as quickly as I can. You can find all that shortly at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll return with Larry Kogan in a couple of minutes.
Took away our ways of life. The tomahawk and the bowie knife. Took away our native tongue. And taught their English to our young. Days made in Japan. Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe, so proud you live, so proud you die.
And so we owe them everything now. Bottom line is, and for that reason, we must give away the farm. It is a sovereignty issue, though, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I also want to bring into context why we're talking about Turkey at all. And because we had filed a lawsuit, as you recall, we had discussed in our last time together, that was challenging the Kur Dam transfer to the tribe, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribe of the Flathead Indian Reservation in northwestern Montana, and that's where all that came up. We had a public filing in the federal district court in Washington, D.C., that had alleged, among other things, that because of all of this tribal self-governance and tribal sovereignty resulting in regulatory waivers from normal rules that, you know, owners of dams had to follow or prospective owners of dams had to follow in connection with the transfer, the tribes were not required to follow those rules, and as a result, dam safety issues remain unaccounted for, and the fact that the reservations could be leased at foreign parties, including Turkey, which had lobbied that law initially for its own enterprises, and the fact that there was uranium all around the reservation but not on it, these were all issues that we raised in our filing, and that's why we brought it up. So it's a matter of public record for anyone to go see.
Okay, and with uranium all around it but not on the reservation, what does that actually...
Well, the interesting thing was that the tribe, as a matter of its own business, is specializing in part in cleaning up uranium tailing spills that happen on different military bases. So they're skilled in handling uranium. Mm. And the question is, you know, what was Turkey's motivation for choosing the CSKT tribe and its reservation for doing business among, you know, 13 other tribes around the country, each of which are located within 100 miles of a nuclear power plant, a nuclear fuel facility, or uranium mines. So that was something we raised in our public filing. And yes, it did pique interest of all types of media sources, including Al Jazeera.
And did they just had questions, or they...
They wanted to interview us, and we politely declined because by that time we had withdrawn the lawsuit because of all the intimidation had forced our clients to withdraw.
Oh,
media went after them, linking them to tinfoil hats and vast conspiracy theories, and the State Department hammered us for alleging that Turkey, an erstwhile NATO ally, would ever do such a thing, and to tell you the truth, there's new information out there that would certainly refute what the State Department line was at that time.
Interesting. So where does it go, you know, where does the whole thing go from here?
Well, the whole point of federal tribal recognition by the Department of Interior is a vast enterprise which seeks to cede greater sovereignty to federally recognized tribes. One would have thought to get them off the government welfare payrolls. But really, what this seems to be is a way to create all new governmental entities among the 50 states. President Nixon originated this concept way back when, and it really had a very expansive plan to expand Indian tribal sovereignty as almost a challenge to the federalist system we now have. Right now, the federal government and the state governments work together in a shared jurisdictional way in order to implement and enforce federal regulations on clean air, clean water, endangered species, and other areas. When you start throwing a federal tribal entity into this, you now have a third sovereign. The only difference is that the tribes are considered, in many cases, to predate the U.S. Constitution. They're not subject to constitutional restrictions that states are that became part of the Union. So, you know, you have physical jurisdiction where the tribes can actually, you have physical jurisdiction over a reservation that the feds have in their name, but hold for the beneficial use of the tribes.
Right.
And then you have legal jurisdiction where the tribes can now implement for the EPA, for instance, or for the Fish and Wildlife Service, all of these environmental rules and wildlife rules, both on the reservation and up to 50 or 100 miles off the reservation, if it affects what the tribes consider their rights to clean water and clean air and pristine fish and wildlife on the reservation. So it's a way for the feds to expand their jurisdiction. You know, the waters of the U.S. is one way. Federal tribal entities and using their jurisdiction legally is another way to expand federal control over your home, your ranch, your farm.
Well, it's pretty tidy.
It's a neat concept. The feds have been really hiding behind the tribes in a way and using them, exploiting them when they want to, and then handing them gifts through U.S. taxpayer monies at other times. Billions of dollars here are going to federally recognized tribal entities. The CSKT has defense contracts worth billions of dollars. They provide military hardware for the U.S. military services. They provide military hardware for the Saudi Air Force. They provide military hardware for the Turkish military services. And South Korea, European countries, et cetera.
God. And so what do we do? I know this probably doesn't have an answer, but what do we do about this?
Well, you know, one of the issues that we've been asked to address is, you know, whether, for instance, you know, how did the tribes and the federal government get the opportunity to claim all of this jurisdiction in state boundaries? You know, when were these reservations formed? By what treaties? What did the treaties say? Who owns the land and water rights, when really every state that was once a territory that came into the Union should be on equal footing with the 13 original colonies? These are all very deep legal questions that involve extensive historical research and analysis, which is what we are currently undertaking on behalf of our clients in Montana living on the reservation.
And so they threw out your FERC.
Well, they didn't throw out the FERC.
Did they throw out
the FERC?
Throw
is another
out?
Matter. Okay, the lawsuit we filed in Washington, D.C. was to try to seek an emergency temporary restraining order to stop the dam from transferred to the tribes.
Right.
The first time in U.S. history that a major dam that could start up by itself without the energy grid because it's hydroelectric, and that could, if breached, you know, end with more than 8,000 and with a number of many thousands of people dying. That was the first time in American history that such a dam was transferred to a tribal entity. And the dam itself is probably owned by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Trust for the tribes. So there is the ostensible reality that the government's watching over them. The problem is the Bureau of Indian Affairs is one of the most notoriously incompetent agencies in the federal bureaucracy.
That really says a lot.
Okay, but now this FERC process is another process, because in that Kerr Dam license, there's many different articles that govern how the operator of the dam is supposed to undertake its affairs in managing and operating the dam. One of those had to deal with, you know, what the function of the dam was in connection with the reservation. That dam was originally intended to electrify the whole reservation and then have the power thereafter be wheeled, distributed, transmitted outside the reservation. Apparently, over the course of the last 30 years, the federal government has reallocated the dam's obligation to the reservation, and most of the power is not given to the reservation, but rather it's given to transmitters, to companies that transmit it outside the reservation. One of them is Bonneville Power. Bonneville Power is a U.S. government agency, and it provides some discounted electricity back to the reservation. Actually, 80% of the reservation's energy mix is due to Bonneville Power transmission. Only 19% is due to Kerr Dam, which is now managed by the tribe under their subsidiary, Energy Keepers, Inc. And we were able to find a transmission agreement between Energy Keepers, Inc. and Northwestern Energy, which is the former licensee to the dam. And it shows exactly how they, you know, the amount of megawatt power that the dam sends into the reservation that's then transmitted by a federal government power company called Mission Valley Power. So you can see the federal government's got their hands in everything on the Flathead Indian Reservation. They essentially hold the dam in trust for the tribes.
Right.
They transmit the electricity around the reservation through Mission Valley Power. And by the way, they also control the irrigation systems now. A very complex plumbing's work that was created back in the early 20th century to irrigate what would otherwise be arid lands on the reservation. The ranchers and farmers who bought into the reservation due to statutes that Congress enacted, the laws that Congress enacted in the late 1800s and the early 1900s to draw in settlers so that foreign powers would not come in and take over the Montana Territory, brought all these people in, and they were told that they would get irrigation and they'd have to pay for it. But once they paid it all up, you know, the irrigation system would be theirs to manage and operate. The dam would be theirs to manage and operate. Unfortunately, the government changed the deal. Now they manage and operate the irrigation system. They manage and operate indirectly the dam, and they manage and indirectly operate the transmitting electrical company that, gives you your electric bill out there. It's almost like a monopoly.
Yeah, almost exactly like
But the feds can get away with running monopolies, unlike the private sector, it seems.
Yeah.
But this FERC ordeal has to do with how much power the tribes are obligated under the license to provide to the reservation, and at what cost. So there was a the license provision for this provided for a public hearing to renegotiate that once the dam was transferred to the tribes. And this was supposed to be a public hearing that people in the public space could see and listen to and have a voice in. Unfortunately, FERC decided in their imminent imminent wisdom to take this public process and put it underground through settlement conference proceedings. And the parties to the settlement conference proceedings would be the irrigation districts on the reservation, the Department of Interior, and the tribes. And interestingly, we were asked by some of our clients who are members of the irrigation districts to intervene in this process because they believe that the irrigation district on the Flathead Indian Reservation, known as the Flathead Joint Board of Control, which is a public benefit corporation formed by the different irrigation districts, which are also public benefit corporations under Montana state law, to represent all the district members. Unfortunately, they were not very open with their own membership, and they to deceive their membership as to what really is being discussed here.
Not helpful.
So we were asked to intervene in that FERC process. It's an administrative process with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC.
At every
twist and turn, they kept on pushing us out. The tribes didn't want us in there. The irrigators, the irrigation district, the Flathead Joint Board of Control didn't want us in there.
It sounds like
if you go to their website, they don't even put anything on their website. Even though they're a public benefit corporation, they don't serve the public interest. They serve their own interests, it appears.
That's kind of handy. Hey, you know what? We need to take a quick break, but while we're doing that, would you mind calling us back? Because the line just got really fuzzy. It's like we have a snowstorm between us. We probably do.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we're going to be back with Larry Kogan. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
She's a Chippewa, she's a one of a kind. All my friends call me Bear Claw. The village chicken is my pawpaw. He gets his orders from my mama. She makes him walk the line. You can find me in my wigwam. I'll be beating on my tom-tom. Pull out the pipe and smoke you some. And pass it around. Cause I'm an Indian outlaw. Half Cherokee and Choctaw.
Oh, Bob. No, you're the one of a kind. Where'd you find that one?
That was actually Tim McGraw's first hit back in the early 90s.
And then he's buried it then because it's politically incorrect.
I'm not sure he still does it in concert.
He's probably going to just lie about that.
That never happened.
Nice. Yeah, really. That was back in the bad old days. He must have been channeling Donald Trump. Oh my gosh. So, okay, Mr. Kogan, back to our, hey, you know, we should tell people too, for the folks that don't follow some of this stuff. I forget sometimes that everybody isn't embroiled in all this. But we keep talking about FERC. FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And they're the guys who are in charge of licensing, dams. So, if they won't relicense your dam, then you're screwed. Plus or minus. You've run up against them. Have you done stuff with FERC before? I'm assuming.
Well, you know, we were dealing with FERC, not actually before we started doing the work with the reservation. See, FERC's role in dam licensing on a reservation is different than its role when it deals with dams that have no relationship to a reservation. And when you're dealing with a reservation, FERC is subject to override by the Department of Interior and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which seems to be the manager of everything on the reservation, including the dam. So the licenses read differently. And you end up stepping into an Alice in Wonderland reality then.
Again.
Yes, I mean, it was just like the presentation I had made up in Kalispell, Montana in September. My presentation was entitled Barack in Wonderland, dealing with federal Indian policy under President Obama and how he's put it into high gear on steroids.
Yeah, what has been the change? Like, give us a little snapshot of what it was like before he showed up.
Well, President Nixon had his own secret agenda as to what he wanted to use federal Indian policy for. You know, and I'm not the authority on this, but there is at least one other attorney who is the authority on this that I've learned from very rapidly over the last several months, based on the disclosure of old documents from the 1970s that have been unearthed on college campus archives out in California. And essentially, he wanted to use federal Indian policy as a way to keep war powers clause of the U.S. Constitution open endlessly. So that the feds can assert all types of authority to curtail everybody's constitutional rights. It's a pretense for a major federal government power play. And you can see that also being used during, you know, following 9/11. If we're in a constant war, then the government has all types of authorities that they can exercise at the expense of American citizens' civil liberties.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the game. Keep everything perpetual, therefore the government can just do what it wants and change the dynamic of the government itself and the private property rights that we all think we have.
And how much of it, I know you know, unless you had a bird's eye view of the whole, you know, universe, you can't really know this definitively, but how much of this is manipulation of the tribes and how much of this, it, just in what you've dealt with, is tribes kind of taking advantage?
It's both. There's a symbiosis here. The tribes try to get what they can get. The CSKT, for instance, seeks to reclaim all of its territory prior to the Hellgate Treaty of 1855. And that could be accomplished through the federal authorities that are bestowed upon it through this tribal sovereignty regime. So what they physically don't have jurisdiction of, they'll take legal jurisdiction of through implementation of federal environmental and wildlife laws. They will curtail what you and I can do beyond 100 miles from the reservation if the water and the air and the animals can be harmed by your activities.
Well, and up in Oregon, it has nothing to do with their Aboriginal land, they've gotten a administrative law judge to say that they have time immemorial water rights.
Well, that, you know, and they say the same thing in Montana. Time immemorial means from, you know, back to the beginning of time.
Predates Jesus and everybody else.
They're primordial, okay?
So,
in a way.
So, you know, since you're an attorney, maybe you can decipher that little thing for us. When an administrative law judge makes a rule like that, does that mean that they actually do have control over all the water right now, or does more have to be done?
Well, they have certain rights to, for instance, in-stream flow, okay, with the rivers and tributaries flowing into the reservation, okay, because essentially prior to this, the Indian treaties being signed, they weren't restricted as to where they can go and what they can do on all their territories. So the way courts and federal agencies have been construing the Indian treaties over the last 50, 60, almost 100 years is to interpret the treaties in the light most favorable to the tribes. What would they have thought this treaty allowed them or prohibited them from doing? And with that type of interpretation comes all these permissive permitted activities that the tribes can undertake consistent with their aboriginal rights. Now, nobody's even paying attention to what the state and its citizens' rights are, because when the reservation is formed, the feds assert immediate jurisdiction and control over that space.
Sure.
On behalf of the tribes. Now, that's not also to say that the feds have their own Federal Reserve rights, such as national forests and monuments, etc., that dovetail with the reservation. So you can really build, you can see how federal jurisdiction can build out, and the tribes can use that jurisdiction to their own benefit at the expense of state citizens and their property rights.
Yeah, you know what? That is, and that just doesn't help any of it, because we already have all these, you know, the environmentalists versus the irrigators, and
well, that's where the environmentalists come in and they help the tribes out when it's to their interest. Except when you get different fish, I mean, you could have a fish fight, essentially, which has happened along the Columbia River, where you have the upstream tribe fighting the downstream tribe that's trying to protect the ocean salmon versus the upstream tribe trying to protect their rights to the freshwater fish. And that's all about when the waters are supposed to flow through the dams and not be held by the reservoirs. Because if you allow more water to flow through, the water stays colder and the fish are more comfortable. You don't make them anxious. You know, I don't know about you, but whenever I eat my fish, I can't tell whether they're anxious or calm.
Yeah, no, me either. They look the same mostly all the time. I don't know where. I mean, at the end of the day, how much of this can be reeled, you know, realistically reeled back in, that's happened during the Obama years?
Well, a lot of this is based on science that doesn't make any empirical
That's
sense.
True. We haven't even gotten to the fake science. You're right.
Okay. So, yes, there is a tool out there in federal law, and it's called the Information Quality Act, which requires federal agencies to ensure that the science that they use and put out to the public space and then rely upon later in regulations that are issued by the same agency or another agency are grounded in empirical science that can be reproduced, validated, assessed objectively, are peer-reviewed in a way that shows that there are objective people with divergent views that have been selected by the organizers of the peer review process. And these are tools that can be used to argue against rules such as the forest cutback rule, which has affected many acres of farmland and ranchland and forest. It can be used to refute the science that Fish and Wildlife Service puts out there in defense of this historical age of the forest, which their rules seem to be based on nonsense, not on real science.
Sure.
That rule basically allowed the spotted owl preservation to devastate the ranching and farming communities on the West Coast.
Well, it also devastated spotted owls, so it was kind of a lose-lose proposition.
Right, and then you've got rules that are out there trying to protect the fish, and they claim without adequate science that is not empirical and has not been properly peer-reviewed that there are certain fish that are indigenous to certain areas that history shows never existed there.
Yeah, except
it's like,
we
wolves in Northern California and say, oh, because of our preservation, the wolves have reappeared miraculously.
Yeah, big surprise, huh? Yeah, we were shocked.
Well, so are the people with cattle. They're shocked, too.
Yeah, well,
and with little children.
For the people who think this, it's like, wow, it sucks to be you guys, because I guess that's what I'd be thinking if I didn't live out here. The thing is, all this affects your food prices. Bottom line, if you
eat, it affects your food prices. It affects your electric prices.
Yep.
I mean, you've got Warren Buffett, who's got four dams along the Klamath River they want to shut down, and he's willing to play along because he's getting paid off. He can pipe in his solar panels out of Nevada or his windmill power out of other states out west in lieu of the dams that serve the irrigators. And the tribes and the environmentalists are in favor of taking down the dams so that the fish can flow and the water stays cool and they're not anxious, and I guess you have a taste of your meal.
Yeah, except none of that makes any sense because all those things won't happen, only in an imaginary world. We have to take a really quick break here in the real world before I blow a gasket about stupid fish. I tell you what, I never thought as an adult I'd grow up and just talk trash about fish.
Well, there are trash fish.
It seems like a strange place to end up. Anyway, you are listening to We the People Radio. Oh, one of our favorites. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in.
Pull yourself together. No use crying forever.
Way too many fish in the sea. Should have killed them all. We wouldn't have to save them then. We could just eat beef. How's that? Oh, I'd make a great conservationist.
Half of them are radioactive now anyway.
Yeah, that's true. So don't eat the ones that glow in the dark. All right, what have we missed, Mr. Kogan? We've got like five-ish minutes or so.
What else do folks need to know? Is quite disturbing in small communities is how there are certain outsiders that come in and embed themselves in as part of the community, and then they divide and conquer in order to preserve their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes their agenda is to work the federal angle.
Yeah,
and
that's
this is something that we've noted in Montana.
Well, I'm kind of hoping we get to, I hope everything goes according to Hoyle next week, and we get to talk about one of those folks, Dr. Kate Vandermoor. Have you actually met her in your travels over there?
I've spoken on the phone with her once. She never wants to meet me because she's always darting in and out of rooms if she sees me speaking, or she always tries to avert her gaze if I look over at her. I don't know why, because when you are able to read people, you get to see that either they're honest or they're not.
Yeah. Well, so, I was reading all this information about her that we had gotten from our friend next week, and as I'm reading along, it's like she does a conservative radio show, and it's just like, wow.
But what she's done is she's
really?
marshaled the trust and confidence of longtime residents of the Flathead Reservation and even up in North Kalispell where the pseudo-intellectuals reside. And they believe that she is some well-endowed intellectual hydrologist brainchild who was there to save them from the evils of the tribes and at the same time of some other folk that don't agree with her. And it just strikes me as odd and disingenuous considering my work in Washington. I've noticed a lot of people over the years, and this person doesn't seem to be who she says she is, and she has marshaled the support of a community that is not necessarily cosmopolitan in any way. and they don't necessarily read, and they believe. They believe in neighborly relationships, and because she has, quote-unquote, worked hard, ostensibly for them, they wish to defend her at all costs. So she knows how to pit neighbor against neighbor when some people disagree with her. And she has a sidekick that does her PR for her. So she's a spinmeister for Dr. Kate.
Oh, well, that's nice. Yeah, because, you know, when you start looking at this, maybe I just deal with too many agencies, but when she was at the Bureau of Indian Affairs, she promoted and enhanced tribal self-governance, self-determination, and sovereignty. Now, that seems nice.
Well, you know, that's what I read on your website. I was amazed by how extensive her knowledge of federal government bureaucracy is, and how, especially the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and how it operates.
Yeah, well, she worked in. I just lost it. I touched this and it jumped. Here we go. She worked primarily in the Department of the Interior and Bureau of Indian Affairs, and she'd also been assigned temporarily. And this is where it's like. Boop, boop, boop. Danger, Will Robinson, right? She's been assigned temporarily to EPA and NOAA's Columbia River Basin Unit. It's like, uh-oh. Because if she's palling around with EPA and NOAA and a lot of...
I got to tell you, whoever gave you that information is a blessing in disguise, I have to tell you.
Well, I hope people read it, because I just got... I got a thing from a guy that's... been kind of a dope, but anyway. And he was promoting her... he was promoting a radio thing that she does as a constitutional. She's pretending to be a constitutional. I don't know what do you call her? No, she's like a. God, what's an? Hold on here. I got to look down at the bottom of this.
You know, I would
thing.
Know. All I know about her is what she has been doing involving the tribal water compact that was.
Here we
put
go.
Through the Montana legislature and signed by the state into law, and that the tribe has approved, and now that they're waiting for Congress to ratify. And Congressman Zinke sponsoring that compact as well.
Well, see, it's crazy because somebody with a lot of history under the Clinton and Babbitt administration, which is pretty much where everything went to hell in a handbag, here she is. She's doing Dr. Kate's Revolution Radio. It's right on our page here. I just couldn't get there fast enough. Revolution Radio is a place where patriots meet twice a week to discuss strategies for the restoration of our constitutional republic. Well, I'm thinking if you're advancing the Clinton and Babbitt program through Department of Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs, NOAA, and EPA, what do you know about a constitutional republic?
Well, you know, I've spoken to Montana legislators about this, and they've been drinking her Kool-Aid.
Well, obviously, because if she's still up there, I'm just waiting for her to pop up in the Klamath thing. And
well, I read on your website that she was there already.
Well, she's already been there, but I'm waiting for her to come back because things are kind of heating up. And, you know, if she has this much free time and can embed herself as into communities and can pretend she's a conservative, I think people ought to know who she is because she, we kind of titled her the Lady Operator, and I think she is an operator. So, anyway, I know you're a busy guy. Maybe you can listen next week and connect the dots for the stuff you're working on in Montana.
Well, listen, Aaron, I thank you and your station for putting out really quality broadcasts and for putting good information out there that irrigators along the West Coast and in the Northwest should be taking a very close look at.
Yep, hopefully we can...
To protect their rights before they lose their rights.
Exactly. Hopefully we'll have the Montana guys drill into this a little bit before they are lost. Thank you, Mr. Coben.
But I imagine your guest next week will help you do that.
I think so, too. Just in brief conversation, I'm kind of excited about it. All right, we're coming back with Trevor Loudon, spicy guy from New Zealand. You're going to enjoy it. Thank you, Mr. Coben. Have a great week.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for having me back.
Have a great Thanksgiving. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. You can join us online any old time, wethepeopleradio.us. We would love to have you listen to our archives. We actually... archive the programs with no commercials, too, so that's kind of handy. Every program has a full page of information, so you don't have to take our word for it. You can, you know, read it and do your own research. And some of it's just, you know, kind of entertaining while we talk politics. Today will be entertaining while we talk politics because Trevor Loudon's always entertaining. Always entertaining. Let's see. I've got some good information on him that I was going to tell folks about. So let's see here. Mr. Loudon, after making some frightening discoveries while researching radical elements in American politics, New Zealander Trevor Loudon left his country to warn Americans that unless these people are exposed, the world will descend into an age of darkness. I think we're there, actually. However, Loudon believes it's not too late to wake up the citizens of the greatest country ever known. He's from Christchurch, New Zealand, but he's currently in Ohio?
Iowa.
Oh, Iowa.
Not Iowa.
Iowa. And it's got a lot of corn comes from Iowa, but they have a lot of snow, too. How you doing, Trevor?
Great. How are you?
Oh, good afternoon. We're actually good. We haven't talked to you in a while. I linked your interview with us back from March of 2014. I cannot believe it's been that long.
Wow. No, we have to do it more often. I think, you know, I'm going to be in the States over the next year, so look, happy to come on whenever.
Oh, yeah, because I'm thinking, good grief, since March of 2014, there has been... I was going to say, give us an update on what you've done, but yeah, forget that. We only have an hour.
Yeah.
So what are you working on now?
Well, the main project right now is this.
The main project is reconnecting with our guest. Stand by.
So much for the main project. Yeah, this is one of those days. We just can't get a break.
Do you have his number? Or?
I do have his number. There you go.
God knows he's got our number.
That's pretty funny. So let's see. Let me tell you some more stuff. He was the one who discovered the relationship between the Hawaiian Communist Party member Frank Marshall Davis and young Barack Obama back in 2007. Of course, no one listened to him, and we elected the guy anyway twice. Then I've got some bullet points here, so I'm going to share those with you. After extensively researching Obama's ties to the New York and Chicago Marxist movements, Loudon began publishing his findings online, catching the eye of such prominent voices as Accuracy in Media and syndicated radio host Glenn Beck. In 2009, he exposed the communist roots of Obama, Obama's green job czar, Van Jones. Remember him? God, that's a blast in the past. And after an extensive campaign, Jones was forced to resign. Thank goodness he's probably out there still doing bad stuff. I'm just not sure what.
Trevor's back!
Okay, so
hi.
We've been in suspense here. No, it's all right. Things happen. Today especially. okay, so fire away. What have you been working on?
Well, basically I'm working on a movie of my last book, The Enemies Within, Communists, Socialists, and Progressives in the U.S. Congress. I've just come back from Washington, D.C., filming some of the final interviews for the movie. It's going to be released early next year as a full-length Hollywood-quality documentary in the theaters, on DVD, etc. We want to blanket the country with it. It's going to expose the heavy Marxist and Muslim Brotherhood influence and infiltration of the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the Obama administration. So it's really going to show how these people have infiltrated your system so heavily that they can dictate policy, everything from Obamacare and immigration amnesty to refugee resettlement to the gutting of your military to the Iran deal. All of this is driven by extremist elements inside your government trying to bring you down. We think this movie will shock America like no other movie has ever shocked this country.
God, I hope so, because, I mean, here we have Bernie Sanders. I mean, who would have thought in this? I remember, six, seven years ago, I had told my mom her congressman was a member of the Democratic Socialist Party, and I said, Ma, you know, the guy you vote for every year is a socialist. And my mom's like, well, that's silly, honey. There are no socialists in Congress. And now we have Bernie Sanders running for president, and he's actually drawing huge crowds.
Who was your mother's Congress member?
George Miller.
Oh, George Miller. Yes, a total mark.
I should say George Miller.
Yeah, complete and utter Marxist.
Yeah, he was.
You know, so, yeah, but, like, we say there are... See, what has happened is this. It's very simple. If you apply for a federal government job in this country, even the post office, you have to get an FBI security clearance. But if you run for Congress or the Senate, where you may serve on the Armed Services Committee, the Homeland Security Committee, the Intelligence Committee, the, you know, Ways and Means Committee, the Judiciary Committee, you get nothing. You're basically in the clear. So the radical groups in this country have really taken over the labor union since 1995. And by taking over the labor unions, they have been able to take over the Democratic Party in many parts of the country, which has enabled them to infiltrate their sympathizers, their secret members, their allies into your Congress and Senate. And now you have a situation where they're actually running for the presidency. Obama was an example, Hillary Clinton's an example, and Bernie Sanders is not a democratic socialist. He is a hardcore totalitarian Marxist, as hardcore as you can get.
Well, and he is
sucking the American publican.
Yeah, the part that cracks me up is, even in the Democratic debate, which I watched 1.5 times because it was kind of entertaining, actually, and frightening at the same time, it was amazing to me that he's not hiding any of it.
No, well, he is, in a way, in that, you know, he says he's a socialist. Yeah, that's fine. He says he wants America to be more like Norway and Denmark and Sweden. But that is a lie. That is a bald-faced lie. He is a long-time affiliate of Democratic Socialists of America, attends their conventions all the time. They run his campaign. They run Labor for Bernie. They run People for Bernie. They've even named him as a member of their organization. And he is involved with them, and they believe in, amongst many other things, the total elimination of private control of the means of production, distribution, and exchange. They want the complete government control of all business in the United States. Not some business, not big business, all business. And Bernie Sanders is their boy. He's promoting their agenda. He goes to their conferences. They funded his Senate race in 2006. They've worked with him right back since the early 80s. And he is effectively their man. You know, this is the guy who honeymooned in the Soviet Union. He
literally?
Went to Cuba several times. Yes, exactly, he did. He honeymooned in the Soviet Union in 1988.
Wow.
Who does that? He traveled to Cuba at least 3 times. He's praised Fidel Castro and his healthcare system. He traveled to Nicaragua in 1986 or 85, I believe it was, to celebrate the 6th anniversary of the communist Sandinista takeover of that country. You know, in 1989, he was at an event organized by the Communist Party USA for, you know, the 10th anniversary of their front, the U.S. Peace Council, alongside representatives of the Marxist Grenadian New Deal movement and the Palestine Liberation Organization, a terrorist organization. As late as last year, he was in Chicago campaigning for a Communist Party supporter named Chuy Garcia for the Chicago mayoralty. You know, Garcia just lost. But Sanders was there alongside Scott Marshall of the Communist Party USA on the podium endorsing Garcia. You know, Bernie has been with the radical left his entire career. They hide that from the public. He hides his affiliation from the public. But his agenda is pure totalitarian Marxism.
Well, it's kind of a good strategy to come out and tell everyone you're a socialist and then, like in the debate, you know, make jokes about it. And, you know, he doesn't hide any of it, so I think that causes people to stop digging.
Well, he does hide his totalitarianism. Right. But people know he's a socialist, so he comes out, makes a joke of that.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and it's a good strategy. Absolutely, it's a good strategy. If you want to con somebody, if you want to fool somebody.
Yeah, hide right in the open.
You know, you tell them, well, I'm a bit of a bad guy, but I'm, you know, but I'm not a real bad guy. You know, I'm a bit of a, I'm out there. You know, I tell you what I am. You can trust me. You cannot trust him one inch. He is lying through his teeth.
What do you
think? The totalitarian has always been a totalitarian.
Well, what do you think the, or how, I don't even know how to ask this question, but how do you, what do you see from the outside looking in? Why are people falling for this? And
well,
who, and who's going for it? It seems like young people.
Well, Americans, you know, there's several things here going on here. Americans live in the freest, most open and generous and prosperous country on the face of the earth. You know, and it makes some good-hearted people, trusting people, you know. They're not like Europeans who have lived under tyranny or Asians or Cuban refugees. They do not understand tyranny and what it is and how it works and how it approaches things. So they're sort of like innocent babes in the woods in a lot of ways, you know. The socialists are using America's best qualities against them. The other thing is that the socialists have so wrecked, and I've got to lump the Republicans under George Bush amongst this as well, have so wrecked the economy, so indebted the economy, and so indulged in so much crony capitalism and corruption, that the American public is just anti-establishment, completely anti-establishment. And that's as they should be. But Bernie Sanders capitalizes on that. You know, I'm anti the big Wall Street banks. I'm anti this, I'm anti that. And people love it, and so they should love it. What he doesn't tell them is that his totalitarianism would be even worse. It would be far worse than what we're suffering now. It's not to excuse what's happening now, not in the least. We have to get rid of that stuff. But supporting Bernie Sanders is jumping out of the frying pan right into the furnace. He would make things infinitely worse than they are now.
Yes, he would. And
and so would Hillary Clinton. She's as bad as he is, but she's just a little even more dishonest than he is. She hides it more effectively.
It's interesting, though. I think part of the debate that I really enjoyed was watching the facial expressions, because while Bernie was ranting and raving, you could see the look on Hillary's face, and it was just like, oh, my God, would somebody please shut this guy up? You could just see the and she was trying to smile and look pleasant, and it's like, oh, but not really.
Yeah, the thing with Bernie is, see, I read the Marxist press all the time, the Communist Party newspaper, etc. They are getting ready to support Hillary. Democratic Socialists of America is supporting Bernie. The Communist Party has been supporting Bernie, but they know he cannot win.
Thank
God. Now that Hillary is really almost certainly going to be the Democrat nominee, they are positioning themselves to back Hillary. So Bernie's going to be shunted aside eventually down the track. And they're going to try and draw Bernie's support behind Hillary and unite the entire left behind Hillary, from the radicals right through to the mainstream left. So that is the plan. That's what underfoot. So Bernie is a bit of a distraction, you know, and he makes Hillary seem so moderate.
Yeah, he makes her kind of seem normal until you actually listen to her. Well, do you think that'll be a heads up for people that, you know, when that radical bunch all jumps behind her, do you think people will go, I think it's time to look at somebody else? Or do you think they'll just...
No, I think it's their best strategy. I think, you know, she will unite the left. You know, they look, the Democratic base is very herd-like.
Yeah.
You know, it's far more fractured on the Republican side of things, and they will fall in behind Hillary when the time comes. And you're right that the general public may hold their nose and be worried about that, but unless the Republicans have a really articulate defender for their side, Hillary will run away with it.
Exactly.
She could well do that. You know, so that's why you've got to have someone articulate and powerful, like a Ted Cruz, for instance, you know, on the Republican ticket. You know, you can't have a rhino like Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump has to clean up his, be more disciplined in his speech and his,
yes, slightly,
his sound bites if he has a chance of getting there.
Well, it was interesting in the news thing in the top of the hour. They said they killed the white rhino at the San Diego Zoo or somewhere anyway.
Yeah, so, San Diego Zoo.
So we were laughing. Yeah. We're like, well, somebody better put a call into John McCain or Lindsey Graham, see if they're okay. anyway, that makes me not want to drink poison during the break after everything you just said.
Yeah.
So we need to take a quick break, thank our advertisers and that kind of jazz. And we would welcome some sponsors and advertisers, by the way. If you want more information on that, find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
So many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. I'm impressed, my attorney Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around, and so I always do what Bernie recommends.
Who is this?
I am blessed with my attorney, Bernie.
Oh, Bob, you're killing us.
Dave Frischberg.
The way he runs the store. He's got Dodger seasoned boxes and an office full of foxes. It's amazing all the different things your average guy might need a lawyer for. Bernie tells me what to do. Bernie lays it on the line. Bernie says we sue, we sue. Bernie says we sign, we sign.
Oh my gosh, hope that that's wrong.
My attorney Bernie.
My attorney Bernie. So if you need a song for one of your speaking engagements, Trevor, there you go. Oh my gosh. So we're you're rejoining We the People Radio with Trevor Loudon, who we haven't spoken with in quite a while. Not for any other reason other than I wasn't paying attention. And Trevor got busy. How's that?
Very busy.
Very busy. So.
But always time for you guys.
Have you circumnavigated the globe like multiple times since we saw you last?
Look, I've been to New Zealand, back to New Zealand a couple of times, but I'm here for a while now, right up to the elections, probably. So I intend to be here for. I'll be available for quite often, but yeah, look, I've been crisscrossing the states. I think I've been to about 43 of the 57 states now, and you know.
Are people getting since you see such a giant swath of our country, do you think people are getting smarter or sticking their head in the sand, or what direction do you see it going?
Oh, look, it's definitely a hugely anti-establishment mood, you know, and you see that. You see that with the rise of Ted Cruz and Donald Trump and Ben Carson. You see that with the rise of Bernie Sanders. You know, there's a real mood in this country to just throw them all out. You know, just get rid of the rhino leadership of the Republican Party, get rid of the unions and the Democrats, and restore the country to some form of sanity. So, yeah, there is, you know. I'm going to Tea Party and Republican meetings and other meetings around the country, and the crowds are good and the people are interested. You know, so I think the level of interest in this election will be greater than any presidential election in living memory. Because this is going to decide the fate of America this next election,
yeah,
and the Western world, to be blunt.
So, so going kind of backwards a little bit. So for people that are listening, going, so why does this guy from New Zealand care so much about what's going on here? I mean, I kind of know the answer, but what do you tell people when they ask you that?
Well, if you look at the world today, you know, as America gets weaker militarily and economically. Why do you think Russia is now on the march in Ukraine? Why do you think China is threatening Japan and the Philippines and Australia? Why do you think Iran is threatening the Middle East? Why do you think ISIS is committing unimaginable atrocities because America is weak. America is seen as weak and ineffective and actually complicit in a lot of the bad stuff that's going on. The bad guys are on the march. Europe is in turmoil. Latin America is mainly controlled by Marxists. Most of Asia is dominated by China. Africa is all, just about all controlled by China and communist-controlled South Africa. You know, you have a world where tyranny is on the march and freedom is on the decline. You know, if this continues, if America continues down this path, there will be nowhere left to run. China will have us. China will have Australia. Europe will be dominated by Russia and destroyed by radical Islamic extremists. Latin America, as I said, is already controlled by Marxists and the Chinese. Same with Africa. You know, where do you go? You know, so really, Western civilization is hanging in the balance. And I say if America goes under, every Western country will fall.
Yep.
Freedom will be gone across the globe. So, you know, just like your boys went to Europe to sort out the Nazis in World War II, you know, that was the front line for freedom. That is where you had to go. Well, right now, the front line for freedom is America. And if, as I say, if America goes down, we're all done. If America can recover itself, gut the federal government and restore the Constitution, you will spark freedom revolutions across the globe. So everything comes down into what happens here over the next year.
Well, just in case people weren't positive that this was as dire as it looks, I guess that kind of puts a nail in the coffin.
Well, it's very dire, but it's also extremely, you know, there's extremely great opportunities here. You know, the people are waking up, and just like, you know, that idiot Jimmy Carter who gave you Ronald Reagan, you know, people under Carter were saying that America would never be great again. And you had the Iranian hostage crisis and the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, and, you know, the world was in a pretty sad state in the late 70s. But America woke up, they elected Ronald Reagan, and he turned things around. Well, America is in the same situation today, only worse. America's way worse than it was under Carter. The world is worse than it was under Carter. But the American people are waking up in numbers like we've never seen before, way more than under Reagan. So if we can get a good conservative president in there, and he guts the federal government and rebuilds the military and goes after the radical Islamists and puts Putin in his place, you can see a massive turnaround very quickly. You could see the most positive future on the horizon for your kids and grandchildren that you've ever seen. It's just we have to win the next election with conservatives, with patriots. We have to get more patriots into the Senate and the House, and this country and the world can be turned around pretty darn quickly.
Yeah, because somebody in the chat room here said, you know, it's pretty bad and we have to take our lead from France. And I mean,
we have to what? Sorry,
it's pretty bad when we have to take our lead from France.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's a little bit scary. Americans tell about France and their surrender mentality, and now France is taking ISIS, where America is basically enabling ISIS, enabling, you know, the disaster that's unfolding in the Middle East, and America wants to, you know, bring in hundreds of thousands of refugees into this country, knowing full well they're going to swamp your voter base and commit acts of terrorism all across this country. We know that. Everybody knows that. America still wants to do it.
And so Obama, well, it's interesting because, I mean, there are people, you know, literally calling the congressional offices sobbing and crying that, oh my God, we have to take the refugees in. They're suffering, they're children. I mean, there are a lot of people who actually believe that.
Well, that is the Marxist narrative, you know. See, what this is not a refugee thing. This is an invasion.
Exactly.
You know, this you know, Bobby Jindal had a great line, you know, immigration without assimilation is invasion. And this is a deliberately engineered invasion of Europe. And if it is allowed to go ahead of the United States, you will have enclaves even greater than you have now of Islamic extremists all over your country. And every one of these people will be given citizenship and voting rights and turned into Democrats. You know, and that's the plan. The plan is to swamp you electorally, divide, balkanize your country, start chaos and wars all over your country, and basically destroy the American Republic. You know, people talk about, oh, look, it's the Christian thing to do to admit refugees into your country. The Christian thing to do is protect the safety of your own children, your own family, your own community. Ben Carson had a great analogy. We know that a large number, a significant number of these refugees will be terrorists. We absolutely know that. Ben Carson had a great line the other day. He said, it's like you have a jar full of M&Ms. You get 100,000 M&Ms in this jar. 1,000 of them are poisoned. The rest are fine. Are you going to put your hand in there and scoop some up and eat them?
So that's so that's the exact opposite of Martin O'Malley's thing in the debate, where he said that it's like a stadium of 30,000 people and putting six people in there. He says it's just not going to make any difference. It's so few. And
it's going to make a, well, how many people?
Yeah, six people with bombs on.
How many hijackers killed 3,000 people in 9/11?
Exactly.
How many hijackers just, how many terrorists just killed 130 people in Paris? You know, is Martin O'Malley going to have these people in his backyard? Is he going to have them babysitting his children? You know, this is just absolutely criminal and irresponsible.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at it, you know. It shows it so obviously that Obama wants to admit Muslim refugees, but he refuses to admit Christian refugees. The Christians are the ones being persecuted in the Middle East. The Christians are the ones whose churches are being burned to the ground. They are not terrorists. They are not suicide bombers. They are not Al-Qaeda. They are not, you know, they're not ISIS, and he won't let them in. They are suffering more than the Muslim refugees. All of the Muslim countries are refusing to admit these refugees because they fear terrorism. They fear Muslim terrorism in the Muslim countries. What are these people going to be like here?
Yeah.
You know, this is just absolutely
insane. I do believe the...
But it's not insane. It's not insane because it's a deliberate program to wreck this country. And this is the thesis of the movie, that these people are not idiots. They are deliberately anti-America. They want to bring this country down, and admitting hundreds of thousands of Muslim refugees into this country is just part of their plan. It's part of their overall strategy.
What's the movie called, Trevor?
The Enemies Within.
Okay, same as the book.
Yes, same as the book. Look, and I'm just going to say, I'll do a pitch, because I always do a pitch. You know, our budget is about $250,000 for the movie. We've raised about $170,000 of it, and we're trying to get the last... It's going to come out in early next year, no matter what, but we're doing an Indiegogo crowd funder at the moment to raise another 15 or 20 grand, you know, towards the final cost of production. So if anybody wants to help and get this movie in theatres before... as early as possible, please go to Indiegogo, I-N-D-I-E-G-O-G-O, Indiegogo. Go to that website, type in, look for the page, Exposing the Enemies Within. Go there, chip in 10 bucks, 20 bucks, 50 bucks, whatever. Just help get this movie out there, because this is going to shock Americans. We aim to get this all over the country, massive distribution. And anything you can do to help, you know, the listeners can do to help, is much appreciated.
Okay, and I found it, so I will put that on the page for today.
That's great.
Oh, it also has like a little YouTube, I'm assuming it's a little clip from the movie. It's a picture of you.
Yeah, there's a little pitch for the movie there. And if you go to my website, trevorlowden.com, you can also donate to the movie there, but that you can find if you go to theenemieswithin.com, you can find a little trailer of the movie, etc.
Okay, I will post that. We need to take a really quick break. We'll be back and let's chat a little bit more about the movie. I'm kind of curious, when you started looking at Obama at the very beginning, has it turned out the way you thought it would, or is it worse or better or what? So we come back, let's chat about that a little bit. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. See you right back. Highly unlikely, actually. Can you imagine? We're waiting on San Francisco to save us. Wow, that should truly strike fear into your heart. Okay, so Trevor, you looked at Obama long before he was elected and thought he was a scary, dangerous guy. So did he turn out to be scarier?
Well,
or about how you figured?
I was focused on his Marxism. You know, I looked at. I was the guy who discovered his connection to the Hawaiian communist Frank Marshall Davis. I exposed his Maoist green job czar, Van Jones, who Glenn Beck got kicked out of the White House. So I knew what he would do. I knew that he would have he would push immigration amnesty to basically swamp the Republican vote to make the Democrats a one-party state. I knew he would gut your military. I knew he would push Obamacare, and he's still going to try and get single payer before he goes. I knew he would, change your foreign policy. What I didn't see was the depth of his kowtowing to radical Islam. I didn't see the Arab Spring in his hand in that. I didn't see how he would work to topple Gaddafi and Mubarak in Egypt and really push the Islamic issue through the Middle East. I was focused more on the Marxist side of his character. So
can we blame you for all that?
He would go a little slower. I thought he'd be a bit more like Hillary. I didn't think he would go quite as far and as fast and as quickly as he did. And I think that was a big tactical mistake because doing what he did woke up the Tea Party.
Yeah,
the Tea Party took the House off him in 2010 and slowed his agenda. Had he been a bit slower and not woken up the Tea Party, he might have actually got a lot more done. And we have to thank the Tea Party profusely for basically saving this country because had they not taken back the House in 2010 and the Senate in 2014, he would have got Obamacare straight to single payer. He would have had 11 or 12 or 20 million illegals voting in 2012 and 2014. He would have flooded the country with refugees by now. America would be done without the Tea Party. So I didn't anticipate a lot of the Islamic side of his agenda, and I didn't think he'd be quite as far as arrogant as he has proved to have been, and it's just steamrolling things through to the degree that he has. So Yeah, it did surprise me. He has turned out even slightly worse than I imagined he would be. And that was pretty bad, I have to tell you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Part of me thought, you know, the look from all of us who got started in the Tea Party back in 2009 was that we won't survive this guy for 4 years. And we figured by the end of 4 years, nobody's going to reelect him. Then when he was reelected, I mean, I think it took everybody, the unthinkable. And I'm not sure people actually believe we'll weather this through next year.
Well, look, it's critical, and he's doubling down, you know. And I have to say, it's not just Obama. It's the entire Democratic Party leadership has been captured. This is a Marxist government we're talking here. This is a Marxist revolution unfolding in this country, just like Czechoslovakia in 1948 or Venezuela under Hugo Chavez. They are that bad. We got one chance to stop them, and that's the election in 2016. Because if we don't, they're going to flood the country with refugees and illegal immigrants and turn them all into good little Democrats, and there will never be another Republican president. They will just flood the country with so many people, the Republicans will be toast. So it is dire. You know, he's going to do everything he can by executive order. He's going to do everything he can to destroy the opposition. But the big thing in our favor is, there's a lot more of us than there are of them, and we have some champions out there now like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and Ben Carson who actually have a chance of taking the presidency and actually have the desire to restore this country. We have never had a better field in the Republicans ever, ever.
Well, we've never had this many choices.
Very grateful for. Sorry?
We've never had this many choices, and some people are frustrated
and
by the number.
Choice.
But
they're good choices. You know,
yeah.
the three good candidates who could all win. You know, I'm a Cruz fan. I back Cruz. I think he's the best. But I'll tell you what, Ben Carson and Donald Trump would both do great things for this country.
I think Hillary and Bernie would do great things for the country, actually.
Yeah, well, exactly.
My expectations
are low. And the reason
I
don't include Marco Rubio in that, though he's good on some issues, because he supports amnesty, and amnesty would destroy America, he cannot be the Republican standard bearer. He absolutely cannot be. He and Jeb Bush would both destroy this country through amnesty. No matter what good things they might do in other fields, they would wreck the country through amnesty. So they cannot be the candidate.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I look at the people who might cross over, people like my mom who voted for Obama because she just didn't get it. I wonder if those people will cross over for someone like Trump.
Yeah, I think a lot of them would cross over for Trump. But this is why I tell you I prefer Cruz. And this is, you know, any of those three I'll be happy with. But this is what I think has to happen. There's two demographics you have to win to get the presidency by enough margin to counter the vote fraud and all the scams the Democrats will employ. You have to get the young people and you have to get the evangelical Christians. Now, there are 90 million people in America who call themselves evangelical Christians. Only 20 million of them vote. Ted Cruz has said very accurately that the next election will be decided by the evangelicals. Now, you look at it. You got Cruz, you got Carson, you got Trump. Who can rally the evangelicals out of those three?
Yeah.
You think Donald Trump can do that?
I really don't think so.
No, because they don't, you know, they don't want to vote for a casino owner who's had three marriages.
Yeah, he keeps offending everybody. Yeah.
I'm just being objective here. I'm just trying to think. If they wouldn't vote for a clean living Mormon like Mitt Romney, you think they're going to vote for a wheeler dealer casino owner? And you have to have them. You have to have them. Carson can get them and Cruz can get them. Carson is very popular amongst evangelicals, but he doesn't have quite the infrastructure or the money well, the infrastructure, and he's got the money that, that Cruz has. Cruz has had his father, Rafael Cruz, amongst the evangelical communities for 2 years now. He's built a huge base in that area. He's been hammering Iowa, all the Midwestern states, and he has got that sector on his side, and he can get them out to vote. Now, the other people you've got to get is the young people. Now, out of the two, you know, Trump can get young people, and Cruz can get young people, but can Ben Carson get the young people? You know,
yeah.
Maybe, but not in the numbers that Trump or Cruz could do. So to me, Cruz is the favorite. Cruz can do it because he can get both the young and the evangelicals, and you have to have them to win.
Yeah, you do.
Somebody's got a better counter argument to me than that. I'm very willing to listen to it. But looking from the outsider's view of your political situation, I think you got three great candidates, but one of them stands out. One of them can actually win the people you need to win to get this election underhand.
Yeah, it's I can still hear, you know, we have a really hardcore, I guess, a Tea Party element or just a far right element that doesn't feel like anybody's going to be good enough, and nothing is going to make a difference.
Why are they active?
You
think about it this way: the Tea Party has saved this country, and the Tea Party won by winning 2010 and 2014. You basically made the work for the Democrats so much harder. They couldn't get their agenda through. They had to go for executive orders, which made them unpopular. You think if it hadn't been the Tea Party, you wouldn't have Donald Trump. You wouldn't have a Ted Cruz. You wouldn't have a Louis Gohmert or a Trey Gowdy. You wouldn't have a Jim Bridenstine or a Tom or a Cotton. You wouldn't have those people in there. And I liken this to Reagan. Some of those people who have that attitude, they wouldn't have voted for Reagan either.
True.
Because, you know, Reagan, he had his flaws, and he did amnesty, and he did some things that I didn't approve of. But nobody can deny that Reagan did a huge amount of good for this country. You know, you imagine had Jimmy Carter or Walter Mondale been the president instead of Reagan.
Yeah.
Where would this country be today?
Well, it'd be where it was when Jimmy Carter had a hold of it last time, which was a disaster. Have you noticed,
you imagine if there'd never been a Reagan revolution in this country, you imagine what a state this country would be in today.
Oh, yeah. We would have been talking about this 10 years ago.
Exactly. You'd have been done.
We would have been toast.
The Western world would have been done. Reagan gave us time. Well, Ted Cruz or Donald Trump or Ben Carson can do the same again. Trump, you know, Ted Cruz is going to abolish five departments straight off. Commerce, IRS,
Commerce.
The energy.
He was going to abolish them twice.
Sorry?
He was going to abolish them twice, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Commerce twice.
Commerce twice.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Commerce.
Yeah. Hey, exactly. Double down and abolish it twice.
Speaking of commerce, we've got to take one more quick break. We have to take a quick commerce break here. we'll be right back, though, and finish up the top of the hour. you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back with Trevor Loudon.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee.
Like, where are we going with this? Oh, cruising together. I get it.
New campaign song.
new campaign song. Is that a kinder
for the subtle campaign, subliminal campaign messaging there?
Exactly. A kinder, gentler cruise. Hey, so in our last few minutes, I just wanted to let you know we've updated the page. It's got all the info about the film. Give us talk.
Indiegogo, exposing the enemies within.
And
Ted
so
Cruz always mentions TedCruz.org at least three times in the interview.
More subtle.
That's just a successful formula. So I get the Indiegogo, exposing the enemies within, three times. So
nice. Well, okay, so what prompted you to do a film rather than a book, besides the fact that a lot of people will watch what they won't read?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, we can get... I can sell thousands of books by going around and speaking to various groups, and that's great, you know, and I'm proud to do it. It's a very good thing to do. But a movie, a DVD, can reach millions.
Yep.
And we want to reach millions of people in this election cycle. In 2016, when Dinesh D'Souza did 2016, which is exposing Obama in a moderate way. It didn't go nearly far enough. But they did exit polling and of people coming out of the theaters, and something like 30% of the Democrats who went to see that movie decided not to vote for Obama on the strength of it.
Really?
You know, yeah. So these are far more powerful than a campaign, you know, and $500,000 30-second campaign ad. A movie like this can impact a whole culture. Have you seen the movie Agenda Grinding America Down?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Curtis Bowers has just brought out the second version. He distributed over 250,000 copies of that. He estimates 10 million Americans saw it. Now, you know, that's substantial. That is significant. I think that movie... Agenda Grinding America Down, that played a significant role in both the 2010 and 2012 and 2014 election. I think they helped the Tea Party resurgence immeasurably. So a movie can do so much. Now we want people to come out of our movie absolutely shocked at the depth of the penetration of their government by bad actors, by basically traitors. We think they'll be absolutely shocked, but we want them to come out pumping the air and going, wow, we can take this back. We can beat these guys. There's a lot more of us than there are of them, and we're going to tell people how we can do it. You know, so there's going to be a frightening movie, but it's also, we want to make it an inspiring movie that's showing Americans how they can get rid of these scumbags and take the country back.
And this is exposing Muslim Brotherhood and...
Yes, the main emphasis will be on the Marxist infiltration of your Congress and Senate.
Okay.
But there'll be substantial amounts also on the Muslim Brotherhood because they work together. The Muslim Brotherhood was trained by the Soviet KGB. That's where they learned their infiltration techniques from. So we want to show... And you've got people in both camps, like, you know, Keith Ellison from Minnesota, for instance, heavily involved. This is a guy who appoints Democrats to committee positions in the Congress. Very powerful man. This is a man who has heavy ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, but also holds meetings in the home of the leader of the Minnesota Communist Party. He's got his foot in both camps. Andre Carson, who serves on the Intelligence Committee, the rep from Indiana, who oversees 16 of America's intelligence agencies, is very close to Democratic Socialists of America, a Marxist group, and is extremely close to several fronts of the Muslim Brotherhood. They funded him. The Muslim Brotherhood front funded Keith Ellison's trip to Mecca.
Lovely.
So these are people who are in your Congress, who owe their allegiance to the Muslim Brotherhood, the Communist Party USA, Democratic Socialists of America, and they are on your Intelligence Committee, your Armed Services Committee, your Homeland Security Committee, And what do you think they're doing to your country every chance they get?
Burying it. We got to go. Trevor, we're out of time. But we've got to do another, we need to do just one show on a tell-all, just a list, listing who's who.
Yes.
All right.
Well, look, I'm happy to do it. So, look,
thank you so much.
Just call me and I'll come on.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
This has been We the People Radio with Trevor Loudon, author of The Enemies Within. Please go to our webpage, wethepeopleradio.us, for all the info. America, the good Lord's on our side.